Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. The crystal ball reveals who is getting MLS rights. A new soccer documentary hits the airwaves about one of Europe's top institutions. Charter Cable throws English soccer fans a bone. Why MLS is not in a New York state of mind. And we share our recommendations of what to watch this weekend. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar. My name is Christopher Harris. Kartik, there's probably a myriad of things we can talk about at first here. But one thing I want to talk about is, I think broadcasters sometimes try too hard when they have, say, a soccer league or a soccer competition. Sometimes they hype it up so much. But at the end of the day, to me, like, oftentimes the best leagues don't need to be hyped. The best leagues have all the action and all the storylines and all the scripts and all the action that's played in front of you on the pitch. And then afterwards, whether it's post-game or whether it's pre-match before the next game, what happens on the pitch are the storylines. And we've seen this in previous seasons where with the Premier League, maybe you went through a rough patch and it wasn't that interesting. And then NBC kind of overhyping things quite a bit. I think they've calmed down quite a bit. But what about you? I mean, do you kind of sense the same thing too, that sometimes broadcasters try too hard to make something appear better and more magical than what it actually is on the pitch?
Yeah, I think ESPN now is falling into that pattern that we long critiqued NBC for with their La Liga coverage. I was a little stunned by the weekend that was, where any ESPN program I turned on, starting from Friday through, and it was a late kickoff Sunday, so it was actually, they had a full weekend of hype of the Madrid derby. And this was reminiscent of what we saw with El Clasico, what was that, last month or the month before? They geared all of their soccer coverage towards this one match that they oversold. And this match was quite frankly terrible. And there is a ongoing debate about Atleti and how they're playing. But beyond that, and granted, they did well with that. I mean, I thought Kay Murray hosting ESPN FC on the Friday, must have been the Friday before the game, she really allowed that conversation to breathe about Atleti's tactics and Stevie Nicol is losing his patience, right? About saying, look, it was different when 5 years ago he agreed, look, they didn't have the resources of the opposition. Simeone had to play this way, but now they've gone out and spent arguably more money than maybe not net spend, but in general, in terms of fancy attacking players, and they're still playing this way.
I guess
Sid Lowe, of course.
I guess in some ways before this game happened, so last week's podcast, I bought into the hype, you didn't. Because that was my match of the week to watch, was Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. I was like, okay, Madrid derby, this is going to be really great. You mean Real Madrid, Atleti has a chance to close the gap. Atleti did really well in the Champions League against Porto. I was bought into the hype. And then, but you said in last week's podcast, this is going to be a pretty straightforward game. It's Real Madrid's running away with it, and Atleti, yeah, they're good, but they're not the same Atleti we've known in previous seasons. And the game itself was nothing special. I mean, Atleti definitely had some chances in the first half, but it ended up being a straightforward 2-0 victory for Real Madrid. Nothing special. And that's the thing, though, too. So many games this season in La Liga. Yeah, there have been some good ones, but nothing really special, nothing really amazing. I mean, yes, Barcelona's in a dreadful climb downwards. I mean, in terms of where they are. I mean, they're not a very good team anymore. It's amazing from a few seasons until now what the difference is. But that's the thing. ESPN has spent so much money on La Liga rights that it's trying to boost it in any way it can. And to me, as a viewer, I'd rather them be more honest and kind of not so hypey and try to kind of talk about some of the other leagues too. As they do, of course, but La Liga is front and center, and the hype does not match the reality.
No, and it's unfortunate, right? We've talked about this repeatedly, that they've gotten the rights at a very difficult time. Messi has left the league. Ronaldo's long gone. That next star really hasn't emerged. We think Mbappe very well could be at Real Madrid next season, so that might change the trajectory a little bit. But not only have they inherited it at a time with lesser stars and presumably diminishing returns in Europe, right? There's this emerging narrative that only English teams and Bayern can win in Europe. I don't think that that's necessarily true. In fact, they did discuss that on one of the ESPN FC shows, to their credit, that the general consensus is that there are five teams that can win in Europe, four English teams and Bayern. And that's not true, in my opinion. But they've gotten the rights at a time where not only is there diminishing quality in terms of the top of the league, but then you have a runaway. Real Madrid is clearer right now in that league than anybody is in well, England is a pretty good three-way race right now. Bayern has pulled away from Dortmund in the last couple of weeks, but it's still only 6 points, right? It was 1 point until that very controversial match a few weeks ago. And Italy is a four-way race at the top, which does not include Juventus. So that league has now gotten increasingly compelling, right? And I know we'll talk a little bit about the big game coming this weekend a little later in the podcast in Serie A. But so now ESPN is left in this position where they have to kind of get kind of preachy and hypey about La Liga in a manner and a fashion that they've never done with other leagues. And it's very reminiscent of NBC trying to keep people interested in the Premier League when Manchester City was getting to 100 points, when Liverpool was getting to 99 points, and when even the year that there was a title race between Liverpool and Man City, there was, 20 or 30 points between them in third place, it felt like, right? And they would still be very preachy. That's what ESPN's feeling like right now.
Yeah, and looking ahead at this weekend's matches, I mean, that's part of the other issue too, is that the other teams, the less glamorous sides, aren't that interesting. So, like, for example, Real Madrid plays Cadiz, and Barcelona plays Elche, and I mean, those are not matchups that really kind of get the blood kind of thumping. Like, we're like, oh, okay, I got to watch these games. So it's a really tough challenge, and in many ways, I think next season is going to be much brighter for La Liga, ESPN, Barcelona, Real Madrid, etc. But ESPN couldn't have picked a worse time to get the rights with Barcelona in the state that they're in currently. I mean, just so poor, and it's. I mean, yes, Xavi's come in and he's trying to turn the team around, but he's got so much work ahead of him. It's unfortunate timing. I mean, we like La Liga, we like watching the games, we like ESPN, but we just think that I think it's a little bit over the top. Now, Kartik, let's skip ahead because we've got a lot of news to get to. And actually, before we go get to the news, though, let's talk about matches to watch this weekend. Is Real Madrid against Cadiz or Barcelona against Elche your pick for this weekend?
No, it's not. And I'm not sure I'm going to pick a La Liga match for a while. Maybe, I think the one really good match this season was when Sevilla played Real Madrid, and Lopetegui was right to feel hard done by that result. But that result, which Real Madrid won, effectively may have ended the league title race. So, none of those games are going to be on my list anytime soon.
So which one is?
So I'm going to go with Spurs Liverpool this weekend on NBC 11:30 NBCSN 11:30 Eastern Time on Sunday. I'm curious now obviously Spurs have had some COVID issues, but I'm curious to see how the Conte effect stacks up against a better side. We've seen Liverpool either be they're kind of feast or famine, right? They're either spectacular winning matches 4-0 or 5-0, or they're showing some defensive frailties in matches against sides that you may not expect. And remember, this is around the same point they played last season. That match was at Anfield. This one is in North London. But that match at Anfield, if you remember, Chris, was a match where Mourinho tactically seemed to outdo Klopp. And then Firmino got a goal late, and Spurs' season collapsed from there. And Mourinho was out of a job within months. So I'm kind of curious to see if that if Conte has some sort of similar game plan. And the other thing that's been interesting to me about Spurs under Conte so far, we haven't seen much of it in the league because they've had COVID cancellations, and also I think he's used the Europa or the Conference League to experiment, which they're now out of the Conference League. But he's kind of betting in some new players, right? We're seeing Matt Doherty, we're seeing Sessegnon play a little bit, guys that can maybe fit his formation as wingbacks that didn't necessarily fit a four-man back line that was being played previously by both Mourinho and Nuno, even though Nuno had played with three at the back at Wolves. So I'm just curious to see Conte. I guess that's probably why I picked this game.
Now, the Conference League is so enthralling, Kartik, that actually Spurs are still in it. They're in a playoff game, I think, in the next round. So they still might go far in the Conference League. But that's the one thing, too, looking ahead to this weekend. I mean, all of these things are with caveats because we're recording this on Thursday morning. We know that several of the midweek games have been postponed due to COVID issues throughout the teams and squads. So hopefully these games happen this weekend. But the game I recommend is Milan against Napoli. So second against fourth in the Serie A table on Sunday, 2:45 Eastern Time on Paramount Plus and CBS Sports Network. This one, in many ways, I'm recommending this one because Dre Cordero and Matteo Bonetti are going to be live at San Siro calling this game. And I really hope it happens, because this is going to be a great opportunity to see both of them on site commentating a game from this one of the cathedrals of world football. So knock on wood for that. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And we've actually got a lot of news to get to this week, so I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, so this week we had Sports Daily, Sports Business Daily's annual predictions. And regarding the next MLS TV rights deal, they said, and I quote, ESPN will renew its MLS rights in a deal that looks a lot like the NHL's, which is really interesting. That means that most of the league's inventory will stream on ESPN Plus with some games on Hulu. Once regulators approve the Discovery Warner Media merger in the spring, the combined company will pick up the MLSB package and expect Bleacher Report to stream some of those games. I'd also note that HBO Max has gotten that a little bit of that piece in terms of NHL. So interesting prediction there. Looks like Fox will be out. You and I have been saying for a while that Turner or Warner Media, whatever that conglomerate looks like after regulatory approval, will probably get a piece of the MLS rights. Remember, they pursued the Premier League very hard and just fell short. So it seems like a pretty solid prediction from Sports Business Daily.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too. So these are the predictions from John Urand, who's kind of a well-known sports industry columnist in the business. And when he does his annual predictions, if we go back 1 year ago, it was him predicting that NBCSN would be shutting down and that coverage would be moving to USA Network, which happened. Oftentimes when he's doing his predictions, I mean, it's one of those things, it's with knowledge of what's happening behind the scenes, and then also making some analyst or an analysis and predictions. And here with him saying that Warner Media, kind of the Discovery Warner Media merger, is definitely going to be a big player there. And we talked about that in last week's podcast, where HBO Max, Bleacher Report, expect a bunch of the games on their own streaming, which means for some soccer fans, that means another streaming service to subscribe to. Bleacher Report may have those games for free, as they've done with some of the friendly games. I think Spurs, I think they had last summer or the summer before, they had some free games on there too. But yeah, ESPN Plus is likely to be a main player too with those games. And this is with some games on Hulu. Well, ESPN, if you have Hulu, that integrates the ESPN experience, ESPN Plus experience into there. So we will have to wait and see. Again, the announcement is expected in the first quarter of next year, 2022. But that's the predictions thus far in the crystal ball. And it's likely that a lot of that will come true. Next up, NBC Sports have announced details of the big change that'll be happening at the end of this month when NBCSN will be shutting down on January 1st and many of the games will move to the USA Network. On New Year's Day, USA Network presents a triple header as it becomes, in quotation marks, and this is how NBC Sports is labeling USA Network, USA Network will become the cable home of the Premier League. The New Year's Day triple header on USA Network and Universo includes Arsenal against Man City at 7:30 a.m. Eastern time, Watford against Spurs at 10 a.m. Eastern, Crystal Palace against West Ham at 12:30 Eastern, and then on Sunday, January 2nd, Premier League action is highlighted by a matchup of title contenders as Chelsea hosts Liverpool at 11:30 Eastern time on USA Network and Telemundo. Now, a question from one of our listeners, and that's Stevie G fan, and he says, I'm waiting to hear how NBC handles the telecasts beginning January 1st across their networks. If they leave some matches exclusive to USA Network in the big cable bundles, that will be frustrating. As a cord cutter, I don't want to pay $35 for just that one channel on Sling TV. And as we see here too, the games that will be on USA Network will also be on Universo or Telemundo. So oftentimes you can get a streaming package that includes Universo for a lot cheaper than getting USA Network, which I think probably the cheapest one is $35, like Stevie G fan says on Sling TV. Kartik, so moving on from the Premier League back to Major League Soccer and some more news this week from them.
Yeah, the MLS 2022 broadcast schedule has been announced, and it features the largest amount of network coverage games in the league history. A record of 48 matches will air on network television across ABC, Fox, Univision, and Unimas. MLS action will air on ABC 9 times in 2022, which, by the way, is not a record for ABC. That record was set in 1999, but is at a high for recent years on ABC. 9 times on ABC in 2022, with a total of 34 matches aired across ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2, which is roughly about the same amount they've been airing. We're just seeing more matches move to ABC, all of which will also be available in Spanish on ESPN Deportes. Fox Sports will showcase 34 matches in the upcoming year, highlighted by 27 on FS1 and 7 on Fox, with twice as many primetime windows as the network's 2021 slate of games. Additionally, all 34 matches will air on in Spanish on Fox Deportes. 32 matches will be broadcast in Spanish across Univision and Unimas. Those are all network broadcasts. And I believe, actually, Chris, those matches air on 2DNA also.
Yeah, I think so. And that's the thing, that too. I think, Kartik, with 2022 being a big year for the World Cup, is a lot of these broadcasters will want to have soccer on over-the-air networks. So a lot of these games on ABC, Fox, Univision, and Unimas. And this gives a good opportunity to be out there front and center, and then hoping to take advantage of maybe an increase in interest in soccer this year, or 2022, with the World Cup coming up. But yeah, more games on over-the-air television is certainly a good move for Major League Soccer in its last year of its current TV deal. Now, speaking of TV deals from this past weekend, we had the MLS Cup Final, of course, and the viewing figure for that one was 1.494 million across ABC, Unimas, and TUDN. What seems to happen, Kartik, almost every year is, I think a lot of journalists get hyped up about the overnight numbers. So, a game that's on a Saturday, those viewing numbers won't be available usually until Tuesday. But Nielsen often releases overnight numbers. So then on the Sunday, you can look at those. And those are only for select cities throughout the United States. And in previous years, journalists, including this year, journalists get really hyped up. They're like, oh my gosh, I just saw the overnight numbers. This looks like it's going to be a really, really big number. Having said that, I think 1.494 million is a good number. The coverage was great on ABC. It wasn't the greatest final. The equalizer by the Timbers, kind of in injury time or in the last minute of regular time, was fantastic. It was like, okay, great. Thankfully, that went in. And then we went through extra time and then to penalty kicks. And we've seen that so many times this season in the MLS Cup playoffs. So many games, so close, so tight, going through extra time and still no winner, and then going to penalty kicks. And ultimately, NYCFC wins it with the penalty kicks. Kartik, two questions here. First of all, what's your take on the number? But second of all, did you expect this to be greater because of the New York influence?
No. I hope MLS is finally realizing New York and LA, Boston, they don't really move the needle. Maybe Philly would. I mean, that was one of the reasons I was kind of, as a neutral in when it comes to this league, although I do have my preferences about certain clubs, but Philly might be one of those clubs now because of the way they play. But I thought Philly, being the kind of sports town it is, and I had seen the Philly sports culture, Philly sports hype machine start talking about the Union in a way. Philly, you have to – I think a lot of our listeners know the kind of sports town Philly is. So, and they have – I think a permanent kind of complex with New York and Boston. So this was a thing they could put over both towns, and the Union might have helped spike that rating. No, I don't think New York, LA, Boston, Chicago do anything for MLS ratings. The number was decent, and I think the number was decent because people love watching matches in Portland. It's a great atmosphere. It is something that MLS can sell, is the atmosphere in Portland, the atmosphere in Seattle, the atmosphere in Atlanta, and select other places. I think Kansas City actually translates really well on television also, especially when they're good.
Yeah.
So I would say it's because the match was in Portland that we saw maybe I don't think this number was higher than I thought. I said 1.5 million, almost had it on the nose, just slightly below that. But I think it's a Portland factor more than a New York factor. And I think there's some realization, Chris, in MLS now among some folks that, yeah, you know what? The atmospheres in Seattle, now Austin is another one, Nashville. Those are the sorts of things we need to be selling as a league. New York, LA, Chicago, the big markets outside of Philly, which I mentioned, the other big markets, San Jose, they're not really moving the needle, but there's still some people kind of in the sports media world and in the old kind of market driven thinking of American sports that say, ah, New York, New York, New York, LA, LA, LA. And they will, in fact, spin this number to say the number got higher because of New York, when I would say it got higher because of Portland.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is MLS is trying to crack that New York market as well as Los Angeles market. And for MLS, when they saw that NYCFC went in through to the final, they were probably, jumping for joy, thinking, okay, great, finally, you've got a New York team in the final. Here's a huge opportunity to get the city behind the team, to get viewers, pumped up and watching this game. New York can make a difference. Such a huge metropolitan market.
They didn't even mention this game in most New York media. Okay, so that's where it falls in the New York market. Whereas Philly, which is the fourth or fifth largest media market in the country, it's not a small place at all. Sometimes it's in New York's shadow, so people forget how big Philly is. People were pumped about the Union after they beat Nashville. And unfortunately, they had the COVID situation. But I think that would have been the capture for MLS in a big media market, would have been if Philly had been in this final. Yep. Philly had hosted the final, and it would have been amazing, I think. It would be a huge event for MLS. Maybe next year. Maybe Philly hosts next year. Let's just hope for that.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been Real Salt Lake. But that's the thing, though, too. I don't think MLS is going to give up on the New York market or L.A., and they're just going to keep on driving that home, just trying to schedule those big games, NYCFC or whatever it may be, or LA Galaxy and El Tráfico. Keep on hitting that, hoping that one day, magically, those markets will come alive and there'll be some big numbers. But looking specifically at those numbers, Kartik, so when we get TV viewership, so we see how many people are watching a game, and like we said, like 1.4 million people watch the final, but we also get rating shares, and what this means is the percentage of that region's of that TV market, how many of them were actually watching the game. So you're right, Kartik. Portland made the difference, right? Portland, their rating was a 11.7, which is huge for soccer. That is absolutely massive. So, I mean, more than 10% of the people in the Portland area with TV sets were watching this game, and probably the rest were at the game. Then you look at some of the other numbers, and then you've got Greenville, Spartanburg, Asheville. So I think South Carolina, North Carolina was 2.1. Seattle was 1.8. And then in fourth place was New York with a 1.5. So you're right as far as Portland making a difference and New York just... I mean, 1.5 for New York on the ratings there. Philadelphia, even though they weren't even in the final, had a 1.3. So there's almost as many people watching the game in the Philadelphia region as, you mean, as a percentage.
This happened when L.A. played Salt Lake in the final many years ago. L.A., the share that was watching the Galaxy in L.A. was the same as the national share. It was like 0.9 or something. Whereas Salt Lake, it was like 10. One out of every 10 television sets in the Salt Lake City metropolitan area or media market were on the MLS Cup. So, again, I don't know why this thought process has persisted with some people in MLS. I think there are others that are figuring it out and realizing Austin is a place they can go to town on, right? There's no other major professional sports there. Obviously, there's a big Formula One race there, but no other – and they have the University of Texas to compete with. But those are the sorts of markets where MLS thrives.
Yeah, and Charlotte starting next year should be a big one too.
It'll be good. Yeah, that'll be a big one.
All right, so
Nashville's been great.
So moving on to the next news item, and that's Paramount Plus has released information about a new soccer documentary entitled Black and White Stripes, The Juventus Story. So again, that's on Paramount Plus. And I'll read word for word what the press release says. I have to laugh at this. Set against the backdrop of the beautiful game, Black and White Stripes tells the epic story of Italy's legendary Agnelli family and their beloved Juventus FC as they aim to capture an elusive gold star in order to avert annihilation. As the journey unfolds, the film reveals game changers from their legacy and a unique and profound passion. On and off the field, it's love, war, and breathtaking cinema as the Black and Whites accomplish one of sport's most exhilarating comebacks of all time. And you can tell that this is definitely not a soccer person that wrote this. I mean, talk about the hype factor. We were talking about ESPN Plus hyping up La Liga. I mean, this is on a different scale. And Kartik, one of your favorite business people there, Agnelli and Juventus, right?
Yeah. And this is now like the fourth documentary, if you include that Agnelli documentary on HBO, that HBO Max, that has been done by done about Juventus in the last few years. We had a Netflix series. We've had an Amazon series. Now we have a Paramount Plus series. And then obviously the Agnelli documentary I mentioned on HBO Max. And they all seem, maybe not the HBO Max one, but the ones about Juventus specifically seem very propagandish. I started watching the Amazon documentary last week, and I quit midway through the second episode. It's just propaganda. You made this point, Chris, I think on Twitter. I mean, these things are getting worse and worse, right? There are just so few of them that are compelling to watch. Yeah. For every Sunderland Till I Die, there are like 10 documentary series that are just total sanitized propaganda.
Right, and Paramount Plus, for whatever reason, seems to be adding a lot more of these type of documentaries there, and there's more to come too. And I was being kind of sarcastic when I mentioned to Kartik that Agnelli is probably one of his favorite business people within the world football, because Agnelli is one of the main cheerleaders for the European Super League. Yep. And Juventus, of course, too, along with Barcelona and Real Madrid. So they're the three that are really pushing still for it. I mean, we're almost at the end of 2021 here. But it definitely certainly feels like PR and propaganda. And that press release description was pretty funny, I thought.
And Yelly, by the way, I'm told, is heavily influenced by American sports. So maybe even more so than Florentino Perez and the folks at Barcelona, who just need this for money, purpose of money. Yelly and the family has extensive ties to the United States and other places for obvious reasons. If you want more information, watch that HBO Max documentary about the family's fortune. But he specifically, I'm told, is very influenced by the structure of America. American sports. And that's why he won't let go of the Super League idea. So he very much is into the idea of closed leagues, and even made a comment about who wants to see Atalanta in Europe. Even though Atalanta is making Europe every year at this point and is finishing ahead of Juventus quite often, right, or finished ahead of them last season, beat them already this season. So I really took great offense to that comment, particularly maybe because I've fallen in love with Atalanta under Gasperini and the way they play football.
Yeah. And they're doing, I mean, they're a great joy to watch, really. Just two more quick things here, too. So Charter is now offering Spectrum TV customers free subscriptions to Peacock Premium. So if you do subscribe to Spectrum TV, you can get Peacock Premium for free, which is great, and get all the Premier League games there too. On the other hand, YouTube TV is in a carriage dispute with Disney, ESPN, and ABC. And if a deal's not reached by this Friday, it's possible that YouTube TV will no longer have those channels. If they no longer have those channels, they said they will give customers a $15 a month discount, kind of a credit. And at the same time, I think there's a big, I think it's, is it the football, NFL football? I'm not sure. There's a big sporting event this weekend that's happening on, I guess, probably either ESPN or ABC. And ESPN has said that they would go ahead and have that game. It's not a soccer game. Have that game available on ESPN Plus for those YouTube TV subscribers so they don't miss out. So here we go again. It's another carriage dispute. Kartik, I want to put you on the spot. I've seen some stuff on social media, but I'm not sure if you're ready to announce it or to say anything about it. But I've been hearing quite a bit about local soccer TV.
Yeah, so we'll build out and announce some more stuff as we go. But initially, I am ready to announce something because at the start of the year, we're going to launch a podcast with Local Soccer TV, which is going to focus each podcast on individual clubs. So, for example, may do something with the Denton Diablos 1 week, do an extensive profile of the club, talk to the club owner, why they started the club, what the community ties are like. And then the next week, do another club, a similar format. And that will highlight independent clubs throughout the U.S. The long-term vision is to build out kind of like an ATA football for women's football, that sort of platform for local grassroots soccer in the United States, which would be everything from really from D3 down. So from NISA and USL League One down to through the multitude of adult amateur leagues, D4 and independent kind of amateur leagues in the at the D5 level that we have throughout the country. We're talking about hundreds of teams. So the long-term goal, and we are building that site as we speak, as I'm teasing here, is to build out a video player and have rich video content. We are going to start with an audio podcast to highlight independent clubs throughout the country. So if you're interested, actually, thank you for the opportunity, Chris, to mention this. DM me at KKFLA737 on Twitter or the Local Soccer TV Twitter handle, and we'll start talking and try and feature your club and talk about your club a little bit.
Yeah, and just to clarify, too, so when Kartik says we, he means Local Soccer TV, Kartik, and his partners who are launching this service. And of course...
Yes, and not World Soccer Talk.
Yeah,
yes.
although we completely support the idea. And I think it's a great idea to go ahead and try to find ways to get Local Soccer TV, local soccer games from around the country more accessible to fans who want to tune in through a streaming service and watch those games. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. We've got a bunch this week, some great feedback from you, the listeners, as always. Matt says, hi, guys. I want to get your thoughts on a few things. Number one, Formula One gave ESPN the rights for free. In exchange, ESPN has gotten a program they show for free on television. If you don't have a subscription for cable, you are still able to use F1 TV as a streaming alternative. Huge win there for them for growth. Number two, I was seriously disappointed by Jim Beglin's co-commentary with Peter Drury for Milan against Liverpool in the Champions League last week. Someone mentioned being disappointed of Tony Jones's commentary of Champions League, but argued that Beglin's commentary on Milan. I argue that Beglin's commentary on Milan was incredibly critical and harsh, to give no sympathy for Milan having six starters out of this game, yet continue to rag on Milan for having no plan. being very disappointed in them for being the top side without giving any context why Milan struggled. I expected better from him. And from personal experience, too, I mean, I've had commentators kind of be overly harsh on my beloved Swansea City. And I think I've mentioned some things on this podcast or through Twitter, and had conversations with the commentator or co-commentator directly. And sometimes, I mean, when it's your team, it hurts. It's like kind of, I mean, I think all of us in some way have had experience with a commentator or co-commentator being critical about your team, and it hurts when you're neutral and it's not your team and they're saying that. It's like, oh yeah, I agree with that. But when it's your team, it's personal. It really hurts. And maybe it's a little bit of that on that one there, Matt. Number three, Matt says, lastly, I will never watch Major League Soccer because there isn't a team in my market and the kickoff times just don't do it for me. I also have soccer fatigue by the end of the day. And I think there's a lot of people that are in that same bucket. They're saying there's no local team. I'm sure there's a local USL team or a local NISA team, etc. But however, for Major League Soccer, no team in the local market. Kickoff times, I think a lot of us have gotten accustomed to our soccer habits and rituals are getting up early in the morning, watching 5 to 6 hours of soccer, and then going out and doing things. And when MLS games come on at 10 o'clock at night, by that point, we're probably absolutely exhausted and just burnt out on soccer and waiting for the next day.
Yeah, and also let me mention on the Champions League situation with commentary, they did the same thing for Atalanta Man United. I can't remember who the commentators were, but there was very little mention of the fact that Atalanta was missing a remarkable number of guys in that first match where they blew the 2-0 lead and lost 3-2 at Old Trafford, that they had six or seven regular starters or guys who were part of Gasperini's rotation. So six or seven of the regular 14 or 16 out, and that seemed to be glossed over in the analysis of the match. I can't remember who the commentators were for that, but maybe it's happening more often with Italian teams. Maybe they're not following Serie A as much as they should.
Next up is Fetchin. Fetchin says, I think Major League Soccer will be split with their rights in the next TV deal to Paramount Plus, Fox, TNT, TBS, and HBO Max. The dark horse pick is Amazon Prime. No way for ESPN getting the rights this time since they put more time into their college sports. NBC is a pipe dream. I'm also a Formula One fan. Chris says, I recently watched a video on CNBC's YouTube page that talked about the growth of Major League Soccer in the last decade, as well as what the impacts of expansion and the new TV deal in 2023 and the World Cup in 2026 will have on the league. Overall, I thought it was a well put together video. Before I go, I have a question about the Major League Baseball lockout. My question is, what do you think the effects of that will be on Major League Soccer and soccer in general in this country should the Major League Baseball season not take place? Kartik, any effect there?
Yeah, I think it would have probably a positive effect, although I'm not sure it's going to happen. But if it does happen, I think it couldn't hurt, right? Obviously,
right? Yeah, and there's definitely some overlap between baseball and soccer, where somebody can be a baseball fan and a soccer fan. If there's no baseball, hopefully that person will watch more soccer. Mercator says Kartik is 100% right about the calendar and the weather. Watching a game in the snow isn't fun and bad for attendance. Try watching a game in July in Houston or Orlando. It's like Qatar in the summer. Europe is a cold climate. It regularly snows and is freezing for many games. It's not an issue. What is an issue is heat, from youth games all the way up to World Cup level. At certain temperatures, which are regularly reached in large portions of the country in the summer, it becomes a risk to players and fans to have them out in that heat. Major League Soccer already plays February through December right now. So really, we're talking about 8 to 10 match weeks, which for any MLS team means 4 to 5 home games max. And realistically, 2 to 3 games, northern teams with smart scheduling. Weather should be a non-issue. And if we want to make it one, then we should ask why they are playing a sport requiring 10 kilometers of running in the dead heat of summer way more likely to kill someone than chilly weather? Turfit says, Kartik, I would like to hear your thoughts, more of your thoughts about having 4 or 6 conferences in Major League Soccer and how you think that would play out. County cricket in England has a new format this past year that I find interesting. They have 18 teams that are divided into 3 pools. The top 2 pools, the top 2 teams in each pool moves up to Division 1, middle 2 to Division 2, and then the bottom 2 into Division 3. The winner of Division 1 is the champion, and everything resets for the next season. It's like having a promotion relegation in the middle of the season. This might be a better format for USL to try. First half of the season are teams in their geographical divisions, pools, which would help lower costs and build upon local rivalries. The second half of the season has more parity between teams that should offer more competitive matches that would be better to watch. And they could end the season with a playoff or a cup competition of all the division winners. Now, Kartik, I know you mean NASL has been experimenting in the past with different formats, but what do you think about this one?
Yeah, NASL, we did single table, but at times we gave additional matches in terms of we had a balanced schedule at some points. At other points, we put an emphasis on local rivalries. So Fort Lauderdale would play Tampa more. Fort Lauderdale would play Tampa Bay more. Cosmos would play Ottawa more, stuff like that. I like what USL did this past season. USL had always had not always, but at one point they had one table. Now they had gone to 2. They went to 4 regions this year: the Eastern Atlantic Division, the Eastern Central Division, the Western Mountain Division, and the Western Pacific Division. My vision for this, and I've actually talked to people. We talked about it at NASL. We've continued the conversations for the last few years, is to see lower division soccer broken out. If you must have national leagues, which the U.S. Soccer Federation requires under their pro league standards, which I think should be struck down. That's a whole another conversation for another day. But in the period with, assuming the PLS stays in place, maybe along the lines of college football, traditional college football and college basketball conferences. Now we know Rutgers is in the Big Ten, right? And there's some odd anomalies like that geographically. University of Central Florida is going to join the Big 12, but effectively have the historic geographic footprints of the Pac-10, Pac-10, now Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, ACC and SEC, and have those as your 5 conferences. And then create some sort of national tournament at the end. Now, and I think that would work. That's what you have to look towards for lower division soccer. Now, in terms of MLS, I think you promote local rivalries too if you do something like that. It is good. I guess MLS wants those matchups in terms of LA, New York for TV purposes, as we've talked about. I don't believe in that necessarily. What I have come around to believe in, Chris, is that teams in the Eastern Conference need to have matches against Seattle and Portland. Those two in particular. Yep. So my previous vision that you just break off the two and have separate kind of silos, one for the East and one for the West, and they meet in the playoffs. I've abandoned that because I know how important it is in Orlando or Nashville or now Charlotte to get Seattle coming in once every 2 years, and then Portland the other year, the reverse year. So so I'm still toying with the idea of what you do, but because you can't have an Eastern Conference team say, okay, you guys can play Seattle every other year, but you're never going to have to play Vancouver. You're never going to have to play Salt Lake because they're not a draw. That's equally ridiculous and hurts competition. So still toying with it, but I like all these ideas, Turfit. I think we can, maybe we can build a better mousetrap, so to speak, to quote Alexi Lalas, for MLS and lower divisions, at least in terms of formatting and scheduling, by thinking about things like this.
Yeah, I think the idea about the cricket idea kind of that Turfit proposed is a good one. I really like that one. But, I mean, you mentioned just a second ago, Kartik, about teams. You think it's important that teams in Major League Soccer in the Eastern Conference play teams like such as Seattle and Portland, which I think totally, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, so we've just finished now the second season of Inter Miami, just as one example. And in 2 seasons, Inter Miami played against Portland once. And that was, I think, towards the end of this 2021 season. So, I mean, that's the only time they've ever played each other. It was strange when it happened because it was like, hey, you mean, when is it? I mean, you would think that they would play more often. Yes, there's travel and different conferences and things like that, but that I'd like to see more as far as some of the teams playing against each other in the same league. I mean, playing more often. I mean, it's just that would be attractive to me. And then last but not least, we have Steve, and this is a little bit of a long one in terms of some of his feedback, but some good comments here. So hang in there. Steve says, first of all, I'd like to say I do agree with MLS switching to a year-round calendar, the idea of that. It's better for lining up with the international game, but I also agree with a lot of what both Disco George was saying about the pitfalls of the proposed system, as well as what Kartik was saying about the issues with the current system. They're both right, because no other league in the world has cities with such disparate climates as Major League Soccer. As an aside, Kartik, you mean maybe the Russian Premier League? You mean, I would think that would have, well, maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to look into that, but that's the first thing that pops in my head when I think about no other league in the world has cities with such different climates as Major League Soccer.
Yeah, but for some reason, what's happened in Russia is the pyramid has segregated itself, right? They kind of had the diversity of climates we do, but not quite. And they would if teams from all over all over Russia were reaching the Premier Division, but they're not always. So it's kind of almost as segregated as Germany is. We've talked over and over again how there are very few teams from the former East Germany that reach Bundesliga 1 status over the course of the last 10 or 15 years. I mean, the economic disparities kind of explain who reaches Bundesliga 1 and who doesn't. Regional economic disparities. Similar in Russia.
And so Steve continues, last winter, 6 MLS cities with open-air stadiums had at least 1 month with a lower daily mean temperature than Fort Lauderdale's all-time record low of 28 degrees Fahrenheit. Those are just daily means, so with lows and wind chill making things even colder, the issue isn't even snow, it's frozen pitches. Having experienced more than 20 upper Midwestern never-ending winters and more than 10 Florida never-ending summers, I can definitively say there's a reason people who can afford to be are snowbirds. I personally attended a Chicago Fire match, where the high during the game was 31 degrees, and with the wind chill in the 20s, in April, no less, and have also attended a number of matches in South Florida as late as October, where the heat index was in the high 90s. That's what I mean by never-ending summers or winters. Miserable conditions for fans, stadium staff, journalists can sometimes persist when the extreme season is supposed to be over. So what can U.S. soccer do? If transitioning to a year-round calendar, I do like Kartik's idea of a month-long mid-season break for a start and then carefully scheduling home games by region. That careful planning could look something like this. No home games or only one home game for each southern team in late August, September, and October. No home games or only one home game for each northern team in December, February, and early March, with a league-wide break for the month of January. Extremes are possible in November and mid-March through May, but less likely so matches can be played anywhere during those months. The handful of MLS cities with more temperate climates can hopefully balance things out a bit during the rest of the season. A realignment into northern and southern conferences could even be a possibility. It would be a scheduling headache at first, but unseasonable heat or cold could still be a factor, but it would limit the number of games players, staff, and fans are forced to endure, either frigid wind chills in the north or sauna-like heat indexes in the south, both of which aren't daily occurrences but also not uncommon. I think there's room to switch to a year-round calendar. People just need to work together to recognize weather extremes in different regions and make it feasible for a league with teams in several different climates. Good show as always. And the one thing I would add to that, Kartik, is that Steve brings up good points. But the other factor, too, especially in the summertime, which I mean a lot of listeners may not have ever experienced, is in the south in terms of lightning. And I mean, there was one example of a game that was this past summer, which was I think Actually, it was Inter Miami, but Inter Miami against New York. But the game had been delayed for 2 to 3 hours because of lightning strikes. And there's lightning strikes in the area, and then they have to wait another 30 minutes before it's all clear, and then another lightning strike would happen. So that game eventually was called off. There's been other games, too, that have started late. They're even supposed to start at 7:30. It kicks off at 10 o'clock. By the time it's done with delays, it's 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So lightning is an issue, too. It's not just kind of temperature levels, whether it's the heat index.
Yeah, actually, lightning is arguably a bigger issue in terms of games, right? In terms of training and match prep, I say the heat is the bigger issue. But let me just give you this example. I can't remember which season it was now. My mind is a bit of a muddle. Actually, two examples. When I was at NASL, we had one season where the Fort Lauderdale Strikers had over half their matches impacted by lightning or some sort of weather delay, mostly lightning, which meant over half their matches weren't played the night that they were supposed to be played or were delayed for an hour or two, a minimum of half hour, right? Hour and a half. And even if the matches start on time, there's some disruption to the warm-ups because there's lightning and the rule is 30 minutes, as you mentioned, Chris. There was another season where that happened with the team in Raleigh. Then known as the Carolina Railhawks, now known as North Carolina FC, where they had a number of matches disrupted, and they had such a kind of backlog of this happening that one of the matches we kind of forced to kick off before midnight so it didn't have to be abandoned and finished, I think, 2 or 3 in the morning. So it is a real concern in the Southeast, lightning, more than heat when it comes to actual scheduling of matches. And the advent of thunderstorms during the evening and night hours is something that we didn't really have in this region 15, 20 years ago. It's something that's maybe we did have it 15 years ago. It's something we didn't have 30 years ago, and began seeing it affect matches the late 2000s and then early 2010s, as I mentioned, with NASL. So that's a byproduct of the climate changing and weather patterns changing. And unfortunately, it's a reality in the Southeast. And MLS has loaded up on Southeast expansion teams recently, right? We're bringing Charlotte into the league next year. We brought Nashville in. We brought the Fort Lauderdale team in. Obviously, Orlando and Atlanta have been playing for a while now. And this thunderstorm concern, Chris, also I have to mention, has affected a number of MLS matches through the years in D.C. and in Houston. And less so in Dallas. But Houston and D.C. have been, through the years, even before MLS had teams or had returned to the Southeast, obviously there were previously teams in Tampa and Fort Lauderdale, they have been impacted by it. So if you're going to expand into that region, I understand the arguments from people in the Northeast and the Midwest. MLS has placed a ton of teams there. We don't want to discriminate against those teams. But the recent expansion strategy to come to the Southeast, Austin would be another city impacted by thunderstorms. In fact, the Austin area is really infamous for thunderstorms and severe weather. I think you have to account for that when you schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a very complicated scheduling, but I think it's important that Major League Soccer looks closely at this for the future. I mean, obviously 2022, the season's been set. 2023, it's unlikely that they would make the change then, but maybe perhaps 2024
In fairness, 2022, they've had had to deal with this World Cup being in November and December. So I'm going to cut MLS some slack on the 2022 scheduling. I don't think they have much of a choice.
Yeah, which also impacts the 2023 schedule too. World Cup being played November, December, so that kind of messes with things too. But 2024 could be a time that Major League Soccer says, you know what, let's try and look at this calendar, because there's a lot of benefits to changing the calendar to more of an international calendar, or aligned with an international calendar, most of which is, transfer signings and buying and selling players, aligning with that rather than having, the misalignment that we have now. And yes, there are weather conditions on all sorts, and there's probably a lot of listeners now that are probably screaming at me saying, like, Chris, it's nuts to play a game in, I don't know, Colorado in the middle of the winter. You're crazy. But there's got to be a way to work it out where it would work for everyone, and to the benefit of Major League Soccer, to the benefit of the fans, but ultimately to the benefit of the viewers too, the actual TV viewers. And that's why this next TV deal needs to be as big as possible. who knows, maybe calendar discussions are part of that those negotiations also. I'm sure a lot of the broadcasters would like to find out more details about that, or have the questions about that at least. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening to us and sharing your feedback. If you got something that you want to ask us, we'd love to read your comment out on air. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on the podcast thread in the comments section at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, all right, fingers crossed. Hopefully, a lot of these games will happen this weekend. That's a whole other podcast. But
yeah, it's touch and go with COVID.
Yeah, totally, totally. But like going into this next weekend, Kartik, what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.